Shall we start?
Yeah, I think we should start now. Turn the music down and we'll start talking.
Okay. That's good. So, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
Good. Who are you?
I'm Eric Corley, and you're...
Mike Juhas.
And this is...
The Voice
of...
Long Island.
Right.
Yeah.
Here we are again. It's 12... Well, it's after 12:02 now on a Friday night, Saturday morning, and we go for a couple hours and do our thing, you know?
We certainly do.
And there goes our theme. That's the end of it.
Yeah, for now, at least.
Hey, we got a lot of good things to talk about tonight.
Yeah? Like what?
A lot of interesting things.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's currently... 13 degrees in Stony Brook.
Yeah? What's that noise? Are we just hearing that in our headphones?
I don't think so. I think that's going over the air.
Yeah.
Why don't we turn up this nice music while we fix that? Then we'll come right back.
Yeah. Any noise now?
No, we're much better now. Sorry about that little inconvenience, folks.
It wasn't really all that inconvenient.
Yeah, things happen sometimes. The tubes get tired out in the studio. And
yeah, that's true.
Chaos reigns.
Yeah.
Well, how was your week, Mike?
The week really wasn't all that bad, you know, except it was really a bummer going back to work for 5 days instead of, you know, having a nice
no holidays.
Well, I did take Tuesday off, then.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to go to Motor Vehicles to take care of a lengthy bit of business, but as it turned out...
Any bit of business is a lengthy bit of business at Motor Vehicles.
Especially on the last day of the month.
Uh-huh.
Which is when I went, on Tuesday.
So yeah,
as it turned out, I didn't do all I was planning on doing, so I still had to wait for quite a while. I guess I was online for about 45 minutes or so.
That's all?
Yeah.
Did the computers go down?
No, they didn't, but the line, as I was on it, had to go out the door. It got so big, it was out in the hallway.
That's amazing. You know,
people told me the reason they do that, by the way, is so if the line is out the door, if you're not in the building, not in the office by a certain time, they close the door and you have to wait till the next day.
I'd like to see people's reaction when that happens. So, you know, there are fist fights at gas lines, and lines in general seem to bring out the beast in people. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Yeah.
Lines at films, lines at...
I mean, can you stand standing on the line for...
It depends where it is, you know, if it's in an interesting place,
if
yeah, I guess
Clash
I can.
If it's a Clash concert, yeah, right?
Yeah, well, that was a fun line to wait on for 12 hours, but it depends also on the setting, you know. If you're in a scenic place, you can do things, sure, it's great, but if you're in a stuffy old building and you just see nothing but sheepish people, I don't mean
speaking
in the shy
of,
sense.
Speaking of clashing, that's what your clothes are doing today.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Okay, tell me how you got that shirt.
This shirt?
Yeah.
Oh, I just...
First of all,
I
describe it to everybody. I'll describe it.
You're looking at it.
It's a dull green with weird 1940s patterns on it.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
How would you describe a 1940s pattern?
Well, as that.
Come on, you got to do better than that.
It's got like these circles and squares superimposed on one another, and it's got all sorts of different shades of drab green.
Now, you see, that's what the 40s were all about. Subways were drab green back
then.
That's
right, yeah.
And circles and squares were abundant.
Uh-huh. I mean, but you do have some red squares in there, too.
Well, yeah, you know, they weeded those out in the 50s.
Yeah.
They got to them.
Yeah. And you got this cute little handkerchief around your neck. Now, what's that for? Just in case I have to blow your nose or something?
Well, it comes in handy for a lot of things. If I see something I like to clean up, I use this. And
mm-hmm.
It's good to transport things. I'm currently holding a few things in it now.
Uh-huh.
And
holding anybody for ransom?
No, it covers up your neck in case you get chilly. And,
uh-huh.
You know,
well,
it's
certainly
all...
not in here. I mean, it's 13 degrees Celsius outside. That's 55 Fahrenheit. But
it's got a plug on it, too. I can plug it in and it'll get warm. Yeah.
Really? You're just trying to look like an electric cowboy or something, an electric horseman or something. I don't know
about that.
That's a cute little bandana you have
there. I did see the Electric Horseman. It was a fairly good film.
Really? And white pants, as if you were working in a supermarket or a deli or something.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And all told, what I've paid for these clothes, I don't think go over $1.
Each?
For everything
altogether.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You got the pants for? You told me you got the shirt for $1.
Yeah. And everything so else I've accumulated along the way.
Yeah?
And that's how I think clothes should be. You should just sort of
get them. Explain your $8 coat. Or did we do this last week?
I think someone talked about my $8 coat last week. But, you know, if you look around, you find these interesting things.
Yeah.
And the most interesting things usually are the cheapest things.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
That's for sure. That's just a perfect coat. I think it fits you well.
I've had
it's this long
about four
coat.
People say that that's me.
Yeah. Certainly is.
One in a condescending way, but most of them in kind of a nice way.
Yeah. No, it's if the coat fits, wear it.
It's one of these coats that goes down to practically your ankles.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, you get to sweep up as you walk around.
Yeah. Makes you feel like you're doing something for mankind. Person kind.
Yeah.
Like are you liberation people out there, you know.
That's true. Yeah. You and your person holes. Woonsocket, Rhode Island. We are going to get in touch with them eventually, right?
Wait, Woonsocket, Rhode Island has person holes in the ground? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we will talk with people in Woonsocket. Maybe we even call up the police department tonight. If one person out there calls us up and says, I think you should call Woonsocket Police Department, we'll do it.
Okay.
All right, that's how we make our decisions around here.
That's true. We base it everything on the listener.
Yeah. Incidentally...
Uh-oh.
You notice what time it is?
Yeah.
What time is it?
12:10.
12:10. Do you know what that means?
That means, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You know what we mean. We're looking at you.
Yeah. You. Put down that beer. You're not allowed to have that.
Come on. You're 18 years old, right? No more. The game is over. Okay. It may have just started today, too, for some of you, but, okay, enough fooling around now.
Mm. Can you imagine if your birthday was yesterday?
Can you imagine if your birthday was today?
Yeah.
You don't, 12 o'clock your birthday, and then 12 o'clock you got to stop?
Yeah. You get to drink for 1 minute?
What? No, you don't get to drink at all. That's life, kid. Sorry.
No. Yeah. Jeez.
Gosh. Yeah, and what if next year? What if next year they raise it to 20? These poor people are going to develop complexes.
Well...
and simplex, and, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and duplexes.
Yeah.
And triplexes. And...
tripods.
I knew that was coming in here someplace. But suppose your birthday was yesterday, and you'd spent the whole night drinking, and then you can't. You wanted to do it again tonight, but you can't. Things
yeah.
can happen. Do you have the other half of this story?
Yeah, I do.
No, you don't. That's not the sneeze story.
This is a story in the Australian Tennis Open. Oh, well. Chris Everett Lloyd has put an end to Billie Jean King's dream of winning this year's Australian Tennis Open, but
oh, yeah?
I guess we won't hear anything about that.
Oh, you're just ripping up an important note on the back.
Oh, there's a note on the back. Oh, my goodness. How do you like that? The half I ripped has nothing on it, and it ends at the very bottom of the other half.
Oh, good.
And it says absolutely nothing of
importance. It says, Tony White, call home.
Yeah, something like that.
Let me read you the
Okay, I've got
story.
It now.
Okay, you have the second half. Do you want to go the second half first?
No, let's read the first half first.
Okay, well, it all started with a bad cold, and 77 days later, Jeanette Chikanowicz is still sneezing. 12-year-old Jeanette of Centereach, a 7th grader at Dawnwood Junior High School, came home from school with a bad cold in September.
Mm-hmm.
A few days later, the cold cleared up, but she started to suffer from lengthy bouts of sneezing, and she hasn't stopped. And doctors don't know why. The family physician, Dr. Leon Dworkin, said, I thought at first it was an allergy, but no matter what I did, nothing helped. We had a good, confident team of doctors looking at her, and no one can come up with an answer. It's very frustrating for Jeanette, whom doctors affectionately nicknamed Sneezy. It is very exhausting. Some of her sneezing spells last as long as 6 hours, with pauses of less than 30 seconds between sneezes. She can't sleep, can't play with her friends, and can't go to school. Her classes were disrupted by her sneezing, and now tutors instruct Jeanette and a student at home. Three times, she blew out the metal braces off of her teeth.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I've sneezed, you know. Sometimes when I get up in the morning...
Read the other half of the story.
Well, yeah, I just want to say that, you know, she's not alone. People do sneeze a lot. Okay, well, the other half of the story, doctors have been consulted and various medications prescribed. Jeanette has had brain scans, neurological examinations, psychology examinations, chiropractic adjustments, and one surgeon froze a nerve in her nose. So far, nothing has worked. The girl's father, Edward Chichanowicz, an auto body repairman, and his wife, Jean, said they hope someone out there may know about a cure. According to Dr. Edwin Zalmeritis of the University Hospital at Stony Brook, a sneeze is caused by a tickle from foreign matter that disturbs the inside of the nose. Those Iranians, I'll bet. A nerve membrane inside the nose sends a signal to the brain that the nose needs to be cleared out. A sneeze results. If that doesn't clear the nose, another sneeze follows. We have to try to find something, anything, to get Jeanette's body to stop signaling the brain to sneeze, the doctor said. With all the doctors that I have consulted, they all agree on one thing, he added.
What's that?
There has never been a case that didn't stop. Eventually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe 40 years from now, but...
Spells the end of Jeanette Chikanowitz.
Well, wait a second. There is, in the Guinness Book of World Records, there is something for sneezing. Someone went on for a few years, I think.
Oh, boy.
And,
well, okay, let's let it open to the listeners. If you have a Guinness book handy, of course, we don't. Our resources here are limited.
Can you imagine that? A radio station without a book of world records?
You know, all we have here is just a bunch of records. That's
well, a bunch
we
of
have.
Regular records, but no world records, you know? That's.
We have some new world records. In fact, we're listening to one right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? It worked in pretty nicely. Yeah, the name of the company is New World Records.
And this is an anthology, Jive at Five, The Style Makers of Jazz from the 20s to 40s.
There they are. Let's give the folks a second, a full second of what that sounds like.
Yeah.
That was three-quarter button.
Okay.
Yeah. Regarding the drinking of the 18-year-olds, we have just been informed that the law didn't go into effect until 1201. So if today was your birthday, I guess you did have a full minute.
I told you so.
But doesn't your birthday go into effect at 1201 then?
I suppose.
Why 1201? It doesn't make sense. It should be 12 o'clock and no seconds.
If you say 12 midnight,
yeah.
It's confusing as to whether it's yesterday or the day after.
And 1201 isn't?
No. No. If you say 1201 December, what's today? The 3rd, 4th.
Uh-huh.
You follow? 1201 December 4.
All right, well, on the subject...
1201 a.m.
Excuse me. Yeah. Well, on the subject, after 12 midnight tonight, the legal drinking age in the state of New York will be 19 years old instead of 18. It is already. And to mark the occasion, a fraternity at Adelphi University in Garden City held a special farewell beer party for those who are now 18 and will not be able to legally drink again until their 19th birthday. This evening's party, yesterday evening's party, was at the Adelphi University Beta Epsilon Fraternity House in Garden City. The beer was automatically available until 12 midnight. It was available to all people until 12 midnight. And then it was shut off to 18-year-olds, according to a school spokesman.
Gosh.
At schools like this, it's going to cause a real problem because there are bars and things that are run by the students. And
that's right. And
half the students aren't going to be able to...
Yeah, most of them are 14 and 15 anyway.
Well, I don't know.
No, I don't know about that either. But, well, in any event.
I'm just trying to see if there's anything else of interest here.
Yeah.
Let's see, coming out of Westchester. Okay, White Plains Public Safety Commissioner John Dulce said his department plans to step up spot checks in bars in search of underage teenagers. Dulce said, "We're taking a proactive stance." You know what that means. We're going
that's
out.
Better than a reactive stance.
That's true. We're going out and telling all the bar owners, all the tavern owners. What's the difference? What's a bar? What's a tavern? What's a pub? What's a...
Okay, we'll have to let it open to listeners again.
We don't know anything, do we? And all cabaret owners. I'd like to know what the difference of all those are. That we're going to enforce it.
Hey, we lost our phone number.
Oh, well. Also in Westchester, you look for it. Also in Westchester, New Rochelle Police Commissioner Michael Armiento said his department...
Armiento!
His department is assuming the bar owners will take the same stance with respect to the 18-year-old. That is the reactive stance... proactive stance that mentioned earlier. They will take the same stance with respect to these 18-year-olds that they now take towards those 17 and under. So he said his department is not going to do anything specifically at this time other than enforce the 19-year-old limit as it now does the 18-year-old limit. And hopefully this limit will last a year.
Dial tone time.
Okay, with that dial tone, we give out our phone number.
It's 516-246-7901.
That's our phone number.
It's 516-246.
Circle 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
7901. And the phone is ringing right now.
Isn't that amazing?
It certainly
is. We can manipulate people so easily.
We certainly can. We'll get to your call in just a moment. And in any event, we're going to get into some music right now.
Yeah, we'll be back with all kinds
really
of
good
things.
Stuff coming up.
Sure we do.
On The Voice.
On Long Island. Oh, that's good. Thank you.
Mike, play it, play it. No, Mike, not a nut horn.
Listen, Eddie, I lost my trombone and I've got to play it on this gadget.
Let's see how that gadget works.
I blow through here, music goes down and around, da da, oh, 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 and comes up here. I push the first valve down, the music goes down and around, da da, oh, 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 and it comes up here. Then I push the middle valve down. Music goes down around below, below, below. Oh, listen to the jazz come out. I push the other valve down. The music goes down and around, da da, oh, 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 and it comes out here.
Where?
Here.
Where?
The music goes down and around, da da, oh, 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 and it comes out here.
BQ, and the music goes round and round.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And who did that just before that?
We had an archival version of that. It was Riley Farley and their Onyx Club Boys.
You know what year that was from?
Yes, I do. Don't take me.
No, you don't, because you're looking it up.
Well, come on, give me.
You can find out what year it is what you mean to say.
It was recorded in September of 1935.
That's what I thought.
Hmm. Originally released on a 12-inch Decca, which is the punchline of a joke.
Uh-huh. I don't want to hear the joke.
Yeah.
Well,
you have the newspaper in your hand, is that...
I do. I have an idea for something we should do, okay?
Rip the newspaper up on the air.
Well, yeah, we could do that, but this is more fun. In fact, this is so much fun, it's unbelievable.
How fun is it?
Well, it's a lot of fun in a newspaper like this. I have Newsday in my hands. Okay, Newsday is a Long Island newspaper. Comes out every day.
In case you're from Connecticut. Remember
in
when
case
they
you're
were
in space or something.
Remember when they were thinking of putting out a Connecticut edition? Connecticut edition.
Yeah?
Yeah. Of Newsday.
You're kidding.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I remember when the Long Island Press went out of business.
You remember when the Suffolk Sun went out of business?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Oh.
That was a day of gnashing of teeth and all that kind of stuff.
You know, whenever we talk about newspapers and stuff, it always seems that Steve Specht is hanging out in the studio.
Isn't that something? There must be something to that.
You just ripped out Ann Slander.
No, I ripped out Dear Abby.
Now I'm ripping out
Ann Slander.
Okay.
Ah, I just ripped Ann. Didn't want to do that. Oh, well. Okay. We have here our two advice columnists, Ann Landers and Dear Abby.
Uh-huh.
They happen to be in the same newspaper, fortunately enough. And I thought it would be fun if we read what they say over the air, and then, without knowing exactly what it is that they said yet, prepare ourselves to debate it.
Oh.
To debate the answer that Ann Landers and Dear Abby come up with. Now, this being a democracy and all, last I saw, we're allowed to do this. We can take something from the newspaper and read an answer. Just play devil's advocate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, I'll start off.
Okay.
I'll start off. Let's see what we got here. Okay. Dear Ann, this is Ann Landers. I am a divorced career woman with an 8-year-old child. My job demands that I spend long hours and some weekends away from home, but Louise is well cared for by a middle-aged housekeeper who is extremely dependable and a strict disciplinarian. Last week, a neighbor told me Louise had tied up their tiny poodle with wrapping twine and the dog almost choked to death. I was horrified and spoke to Louise about it. She said she was pretending the dog was a naughty boy and she didn't mean to hurt him. This morning, I looked out my bedroom window and saw Louise hitting a stray kitten with a big stick. I rushed downstairs. She said the kitten had been bad and she was punishing her. I am concerned about my daughter's behavior. No SIG in Sarasota. Dear Sarah,
okay.
Dear Sarah, your 8-year-old is acting out of repressed anger. Perhaps that strict disciplinarian may be a lot stricter than you realize, and Louise is taking out her resentment on whatever is handy. Talk to Louise and find out what kind of punishment she has been getting from the housekeeper. Rearrange your work schedule so you can spend more time at home, and please consider engaging another housekeeper.
But now, how come she goes and blames the housekeeper?
I bet
it's all the mother's fault.
Yeah, not to mention the animals that hang around the kid.
Yeah,
maybe the animals were bad.
Did
you ever have a kitten attack you?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, they can be annoying as all heck.
All heck, yes.
Yeah, sir. And dogs, too. Now, dogs, you know, can be naughty boys. You know, she says she was pretending the dog was a naughty boy, but it's true. It has happened.
Yeah.
I had a dog once. Oh, ho.
Did it ever bite you?
No, it never bit
but
me.
But female dogs are supposedly...
It attacked
even,
me with sarcasm.
Even
you wouldn't believe it.
Even more rambunctious than male dogs.
I think this kid has got a brain, and Louise actually should be getting a medal instead of a spanking.
That's
and
true.
Also, one other thing.
What's that?
Dear Sarah, I think this has got to stop, you know?
Yeah,
addressing people with making up names out of cities?
Yeah.
Sarasota does not mean Sarah,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Enough of this nonsense.
Did you read any of these beforehand?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. So then you want me to go next with
okay.
the Dear
go
Abby?
Ahead. Dear Abby next.
Dear Abby, I'm a 26-year-old handsome school teacher, 5 foot 760 pounds with brown hair and hazel eyes. My problem? I'm having a terrible time finding girls my type to date.
Mm-hmm.
I am shy, horny, sorry about that. I didn't mean to say that. I am shy, old-fashioned, respectable, modest, and quiet. I've tried churches, dances, nightclubs, dating services, and I am at a dead end. How does a guy...
Dead ends are good, too. You can find a lot of interesting people in dead ends.
How does a guy like me meet a nice, shy, homebody girl type with old-fashioned moral values who likes to dress up? I despise... Dress up as what, I'd like to know. I despise seeing a girl in jeans. Is there some way I can make contact with the kind of girl I'm looking for? I am marriage-minded and want a permanent relationship. I would appreciate any advice you can give me. I am tired of one-night stands and getting hurt. Thank you. Signed, Once a Wife in Mass. Dear Once, you sound desperate. Maybe that's your problem. You're too eager. Ask your neighbors, colleagues, and friends if they know a girl who would be interested in meeting a respectable, quiet, modest, horny, a handsome 26-year-old school teacher.
In a dead end.
Except every blind date you get, even with a girl who wears jeans. Maybe you can talk her into a change of style.
Now, come on.
I mean,
what rights does this guy have to talk anybody into a change of style?
That's right.
She's advocating that this person go up to another person and say, take off your jeans and put on a dress.
That's
right. You know,
right.
Can you believe Ann Landers?
On the first date, too. Can you imagine that?
On the first date. My goodness.
Take off your jeans. Oh, boy,
and,
what I did here.
And some girl is going to be, you know, victimized because of this. Because suggests for this person, this obviously repressive, sick individual.
And if
who should be on David Susskind so everybody could see him.
If he doesn't have any luck with people his own age, what he's going to do is he's going to find somebody that's very impressionable, like school-age children.
Yeah.
And ask them to take off their jeans. Now, that's going to be even worse. And you know how impressionable kids are. They'll do anything.
That's right. I hope Dear Abby has hanging over her head.
I heard that, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what she said, what was the name here?
Once.
Once.
Dear
Once.
Dear Once.
Now, what are the subtle implications of that, I wonder? Once.
What are the latent implications of that, I'd say?
That's right. The blatant ones,
too. Latent and blatant. I always get those two confused.
Okay.
Subtle with a B.
Back to Ann Landers. Dear Ann. See, they always give her a nice name.
Mm.
Dear Ann, Dear Ann, Dear Ann, Dear Abby. You know, what is Dear Once, Dear Sarah? All right, Dear Ann, the letter from the old gentleman in Erie, Pennsylvania, who was afraid to go to the dentist because he was scared to death of the pain, received good advice. I remember that letter. You told him modern dentistry has made tremendous advances and dental care today can be virtually painless. I am horrified of the dentist for another reason. It is the fear of being strapped in that chair. I cannot stand the thought of not being able to move my head, much less getting up and walking around for a minute. I've tried 3 dentists and explained the problem, but it gets worse instead of better. Can you help? Greensboro, North Carolina. The entire city wrote this letter. Dear NC, what you need is a patient, compassionate dentist. If you can't find one in Greensboro, try Raleigh or Durham. Now, just what is that supposed to mean?
She doesn't tell him to do anything there.
You're supposed to move to another city to find a dentist? Are you condemning the entire city of Greensboro? I've heard about Greensboro. Nice things go on there. The Carolina Cougars used to play in Greensboro.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Huh.
In the old ABA.
Hmm.
They wouldn't do that if Greensboro was for old nasty people.
Wait a minute now. He says he got strapped into a chair?
No, this person is a... It's not a he or a she.
Yeah, well, the city says they got strapped
into a chair.
The city,
Greensboro, North Carolina says... It is the fear of being strapped in that chair.
But
now, I have never known.
I've never been strapped into a dentist chair. That person or that city must be so big that they just roll out of the chair otherwise, I guess.
Must be.
Something like that.
Or else that they're in planes
you
or
know,
something.
I did the blues show this week.
Yeah.
And I had a guy call up just after 7 o'clock with a request saying that he always goes to the dentist's. Whenever he has to go to the dentist, he goes on a Tuesday night so he can listen to the blues show on the headphones that the dentist gives him. Now, that's a kind and patient, compassionate dentist.
I'll say.
So he ought to move to Setauket or wherever this dentist was.
Well, no, I'd like to know what's so good about Raleigh or Durham. I mean, obviously, Ann Landers has some kind of a sick hang-up about Raleigh or Durham.
Or Greensboro.
Maybe, yeah. Well, a negative reaction to Greensboro, but obviously something very positive about Raleigh or Durham.
Yeah.
And I guess if she had her way, she'd advocate for everybody to move there.
She's probably getting a little something under the table there.
I'll bet she is from the city fathers.
Okay, let's call up the Chamber of Commerce of Raleigh or Durham. Oh, I don't know the number. Sorry.
We'll get to it. But I think she's on the take here.
Mm, or on the make.
You got something from Dear Abby?
Yeah. Dear Abby, I'm writing in response to the 14-year-old who wanted to have a party in the family room, but her father says that he uses the room for sitting and relaxing during the evening and suggested she have her party in the basement, garage, or outside. I had the same problem when I was 15 in one of my first boy-girl party in my living room. Our father was also concerned about disturbing his rest. He goes to bed about 9:30 p.m., and his bedroom is in close proximity to the proposed party.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how my father solved the problem. He actually set up a bed in the garage and went to sleep at 9:30. It was okay, but I remember how embarrassed I was when a couple of guests walked into the garage and heard him snoring. I have a nice father, but he's a little weird. Signed, Orinda. And it says here, Dear Orinda. Now that's being creative and imaginative.
Yeah, I'll say.
Father who can fall asleep at 9:30 while his daughter is having her first boy-girl party is one in a million. Most fathers in that situation would have their ears to the wall until the last kid went home. Now, what is she trying to say by this?
Yeah, she's implying something about that person's father. Now, Orinda wrote this nice letter saying, gosh, I love my father. He's a little bit weird, but he's nice.
Yeah.
And now I'll bet this kid is suspecting maybe he had his ear to the wall in the garage.
Yeah, even
maybe
though
he just had a snoring machine going.
That's
you know,
right, yeah.
To embarrass the people.
Mm, he might have, geez, you know. This woman is making every impressionable kid be so maligned and stuff like that.
Right. Now, if you have a father, I mean, if you have a party and your father happens to sleep in the garage, he's going to listen, right? That's what she's saying. She's saying one in a million won't, okay?
Right.
Do you have any conception of what one in a million is?
Right.
One in a million?
That's a pretty big number.
Yeah. The chances of, you know, like Mets winning or something, it's astronomical. I don't think we're capable of comprehending something like that.
Right.
I mean, who is she?
And I bet
to come barging into this person's home, even though she sent her a letter, and say these nasty things about her father.
Hmm.
I think she should launch a lawsuit against her. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well,
dear Abby,
at least she didn't discombobulate her name or anything like that.
No, she gave it right back to you.
Anything from Ann Slander?
One last one from Ann. Yeah. Dear Ann, everyone dumps on you. May I have my turn? It's browsers. No, I don't work in a store. I am a receptionist in an office that occupies the top floor of a new building. Every yokel who comes to town wanders in here and wants to look out our windows. Don't they realize this is a place of business? Everyone who comes through the door says, gee, this is the highest I have been in my whole life. Do you mind if I look around? Then they wander from office to office, interrupting everybody, repeating the same dumb line. Gee, I've never been so high up. I am expected to greet the public with a smile. I do my best, but it's getting harder and harder. Counting to 10 in Iowa. Dear counting.
Mm.
Iowa? ! And 3 exclamation points. I'll not name the city. It wouldn't do your business much good. Simply say to the gawkers, sorry, we aren't open to the public for security reasons. We hope you understand.
You know what my suggestion would be? And that would be to install an observation deck on the top floor. Now, that's the most logical and reasonable situation.
Yeah,
to
I
do.
Think any
now,
business has that obligation to
when
the public.
When I was in Philadelphia just a few weeks ago, not this past time, but the time before that,
uh-huh.
I went into, I forget the name of the building, some important insurance company or something like that.
Yeah.
Has a whole entire floor dedicated to observation.
Isn't that nice and free, too?
No, it isn't.
Oh.
You have to pay for the elevator ride.
You're kidding. What if you have business up there?
Well,
it's mighty expensive.
Yeah, well, you have to.
If you work there, God, you go broke.
Yeah. Well, no, they have an outside elevator that has glass windows and stuff, so you can see as you're rising up. It's you know, you've never been that high in your life.
Golly.
Depends on that sensimilia, too.
Okay, but what about Anne's advice here? Now, I think Anne's advice really stinks here, okay? First of all, she refuses to name the city. Now, obviously, here we go back again to this hang-up she has about cities.
Well, that's because she's from Iowa, you see.
She's on the take for this city, too. She won't name the city because if she does, that business will hurt because all the people will realize they can't go in and gawk.
Right.
And then, okay, she should have said something about the fact that this person calls everybody yokels, you know? Every yokel who comes to town
I noticed
wanders
that.
In here.
And she didn't reference anything about being dumped on at all.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if somebody said they were going to dump on me, I'd certainly make note of that.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think the 3 exclamation points after Iowa were totally uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah. I tell you, I have one last one here from Dear Abby.
Okay. It
says, Dear Abby, a correspondent from Durango, Colorado, wrote, the most effective way to deal with obscene phone calls is to keep a referee's whistle near the phone. One sharp blast and the caller hangs up, never to call again. Poor suggestion. One sharp blast could do serious eardrum damage. Whistleblower errs again when he says the caller would not call again. He'd call all right after getting a whistle of his own. Signed, A-K-I Mo.
A-K-I... What?
That's what it says.
Is that some kind of a joke?
A-K-I Mo.
I fail to see the humor in that.
Well,
no one else is laughing.
It's probably somebody by the name of A-K in a village or town that begins with I in Missouri. It says, Dear A-K, several readers were quick to blow the whistle on Durango whistleblower, the reason you pointed out. One even cited a case where the obscene phone caller sued his victim for permanently damaging his eardrum, and won.
Now, what's she doing there? Encouraging obscene phone callers?
That's what
you
see
that?
Before.
I see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's in there if you read between those lines.
And I did.
Yeah.
As you were reading them, I read between the lines.
You know, I think that with the way telephones are, I think she's totally wrong here.
The way
telephones operate is it cuts out certain frequencies, you know, because the lines are so poor, and at the crucial eardrum damage frequency, those frequencies are all virtually eliminated through the phone, especially if it's a long-distance call.
That's right.
Now, I think the most eardrum damage would come to the person who's blowing the whistle, because they're holding the phone right next to them, and obviously it's going to be louder in their ear than their caller.
Because they're right there, and also they're going to hear it in their other ear, because their other ear happens to be in the neighborhood, too.
That's right. That's right. So what I'm going to do with this is just...
And one further thing, I mean, Dear Abby obviously wants these obscene phone callers to continue, because if they didn't continue, I mean, she'd lose half her letters. Half her letters are about obscene phone callers.
And obscene writers.
Obscene writers, just obscenity in general.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, when obscenity makes you money, I mean, what else could they do for a living?
That's right.
So, obviously there's something there, too. Well, I'm glad we had this out. I'm glad we uncovered all these nasty bits.
Yeah,
don't
well...
you? I feel better. I feel like we've done a service for people.
Can you read that? No... Excuse me for a minute. I have to go back in the library.
You do? Whatever
no,
for?
No, Steve was able to read it, so it's a good thing Steve's here, because and he's running.
Why, you
too.
found a good song or something?
Of course I found a good song.
About obscene phone calls?
No, no, not at all.
About referees' whistles?
No.
About Dear Abby?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Dear Abby. Now, who does a song called Dear Abby?
John Prine does the song Dear Abby.
I might have guessed.
You know, I wanted it to be a surprise, but...
it didn't work out that way,
no,
did it?
No, because he couldn't read my handwriting, and I had to explain.
Yeah. What time is it?
It's 12:43.
12:43? We got the real world coming up real
42
soon.
42 minutes into the new law...
No, 42 minutes into the new
That's
law.
What I said.
Oh.
What did you think I said?
I thought you said 43 minutes.
No.
You said 42.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And it's 13 Celsius, 55 Fahrenheit, in Stony Brook. And we're going to have a really interesting weather forecast coming up in a little while.
A good one, yeah. Our telephone number, in case you would like to speak to us or something.
Is
and
circle 6-5-7-9-0-1.
That's 516-246-7901. That's our phone number. And,
right.
You know, call it up. Everyone's got a good chance of calling us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk to you and give you advice. I mean, we'll give you real advice, okay?
Yeah, real advice. And we won't even put you on the air.
Nobody's advised us to call that city in Rhode Island yet that has person holes.
Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
Woonsocket.
That's a...
With a name like Woonsocket, you got to do something strange.
I bet you that's a made-up name.
What does Woonsocket mean? I bet it's something Indian, you know?
I'll bet so, too.
Yeah.
But now, if... Maybe this person is calling to tell us.
Yeah, well, hold on the line. We'll get right to you.
Our thanks to Steve Specht for going back in the library and picking up Dear Abby.
Without him, he would not be hearing this now.
3 months ago.
He'd just be hearing us.
I was in Rome, Italy, and New York. I don't know what I was doing there. I was just there. I got this sandwich one day, and they gave me a newspaper with it. It was the only... newspaper they had there that was in English, and they had all the news from all around the world just crammed into four pages. Didn't even have any funnies in there, you know. Every time you turn a page, something just jumped right out at you, you know. So I found an old friend in there, and I wrote her a song. It's for Dear Abby.
Dear Abby, my feet are too long. My hair's falling out and my rights are all wrong. My friends, they all tell me they've no friends at all. Won't you write me a letter? Won't you give me a call? Signed, Bewildered, bewildered, you have no complaint. You are what you are, and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, my fountain pen leaks. My wife hollers at me and my kids are all freaks. Every side I get up on is the wrong side of bed. If it weren't so expensive, I'd wish I were dead. Dying unhappy. Unhappy, unhappy, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby,
dear Abby.
Dear Abby, dear Abby, you won't believe this, but my stomach makes noises whenever I kiss. My girlfriend tells me it's all in my head, but my stomach tells me to write you instead. Sign, noisemaker. Noisemaker. You are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knock no wood. Yeah. Dear Harry, dear Harry, well, I never thought that me and my girlfriend would ever get caught. We were sitting in the back seat just shooting the breeze with her hair up in curlers and her pants to her knees. Sign, just married. Just married, just married. You have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Sign, dear Abby.
And now the voice of Long Island journeys outward from its protective shield to visit the real world. On the real world this week is diseases, death, the meaning of life, and everything. And the answer is not 42.
Because all these things are abomination to the Lord God. Because every day the girls dress up in their trousers. I say, what happened to your skirts and blouses? Why can't I man see you in your dresses? Call these things unto judge and I'll please. And every day them are worshipping vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelries. Mind y'all lick you with diseases. Hey, mind y'all lick you with diseases. Why, the most dangerous diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis. The other one is the poliomyelitis. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, cause every day that's a turning Bible pages. From Proverbs forward to Genesis. From Revelation to Ecclesiastes. But let me tell you, say my wisdom increases. And the lust of the world it decreases. While every day man I build explosives. The corruption of the world it exposes. Mind your liquid with diseases. Hey, mind your liquid with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis.
The other one is the pole of my light is. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, while the stars that shine from the galaxies, and it shines on human faces. Hear the cry of the Israelite voices, once led by the man Moses. Jah, we need your advice. Hey, help us out of the crisis. Hey, Jah, we need your advice. Help us out of the crisis. You see, every day the girls dress up in a trousers. I say, what happened to your skirts and blouses? Why can't I man see you in your dresses? All these things and to judge are not pleasing. And every day them are worshiping vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelry. Hey, Jah, you feel it them with diseases. Jah, you feel it them with diseases. After the most dangerous diseases.
Oh, Lord.
I'm talking about the dangerous diseases.
Oh,
I'm talking like the elephantitis.
The other one is the poliomyelitis.
Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, every day that I turn the Bible pages.
From Proverbs forward to
Jesus. From Revelation to Ecclesiastes.
So let me tell you, tell me wisdom increases.
And the loss of the world, it decreases.
Every day, man, I feel explosive.
The incorruption of the world, it exposes.
Mind your lick you with diseases.
Hey,
mind your lick them with diseases.
Hey, and you feel it them with diseases. Jah, you feel it them with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases.
Yeah.
The poliomyelitis, arthritis, and the one diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
Fill it them with diseases.
Oh, Lord.
And I don't want to know pregnancies for chatting with them with diseases every day. You fill it them with diseases. Hey, can we fill it right? Right. You fill it them with diseases.
Hello, I'm James Hamilton. The name of our program is All Scripture is Beneficial. Today, we'll deal with one of the most sensitive of all areas in the human experience, death. If any event leaves most of us embarrassed for what to say or do of any real significance, that's the one. We seem so often to comfort with words which don't make contact with minds or hearts. Our best intentions, somehow, won't translate themselves into substance. Our deepest compassion is a pool unexpressed, and the bereaved lives on in deepening loneliness. There is another way. We invite you to explore it with us in this special episode of All Scripture is Beneficial.
Mr. Lawford?
Doctor?
I'm afraid it's all over.
Is she...
We took every measure we knew how, Mr. Lawford. But there's a limit to how far we can go and what we can do. I'm sorry. Your wife was a very brave woman.
Oh, no. No. It can't be.
Be easy on yourself, man. Remember, you've still got a lot of life to lead.
I've got to think. Just let me go somewhere and think. That's all I need to do.
Ann and I are both very sorry.
Thanks for coming back. Yes, it's just one of those things, you know, what can you do?
Still, it happened so fast. Joyce was so young. It's a heavy load, Fred, no matter what way you try to put it.
It wasn't even 5 years, Ann. Hadn't even been married 5 years.
You loved her very deeply, didn't you?
Almost more than I can stand to feel right now. Is this the whole world suddenly closed down? You don't know if it's ever going to open. Funny thing, Dan. Still hear her talking to me. Everything in the apartment is a memory of her. Why did it have to happen?
I think most of us were taken by surprise, Fred. Joyce seemed like such a healthy, active woman. You'd never imagine her heart giving out on her. And wasn't she always the one to help?
Yeah, that was Joyce, all right. I remember once when we first got to know you and Ann, you mentioned some point from the Bible that stuck right with Joyce. She even used it on her mother once.
She did?
Yeah, that's what she did. So I was surprised when her mother listened and just accepted it. She had courage, Dan. I loved her for that.
And there was that time that Ann came down with the flu a few months ago, and Joyce came over to help with the housework. We could have managed, but Joyce simply insisted.
There was nobody quite like Joyce, Dad. But that's all over now.
Listen, Fred, I know you've got a lot of things to do, what with all the arrangements, but Ann and I would like to have you over for dinner tomorrow night. We can have a bite to eat and talk quietly.
I don't know, Dan. I don't want you to put yourselves out.
Look, we felt close to you ever since we first began to know you. We want you to come, Fred.
Well, all right, Dan. Thank you so much.
Now, is there anything else I can help you with? The way you fix it, you know he'll like it, Ann.
You say that so often, I'm not sure I can believe you all the time.
Can I help it if you're a good cook? But we ought to think seriously about Fred's coming over. He's having a hard time.
Well, what do you think we should do, Dan?
I was looking up some advice right after I got home from work.
What did you find?
I got something out of Colossians 3:12.
You did?
Yes, it says, accordingly, as God's chosen ones, holy and loved, clothe yourselves with the tender affections of compassion. There's what I've been really thinking about, the need for compassion.
Of course, it's necessary. Could you hand me the milk, please, Dan? Thanks.
Necessary, but it isn't easy to have.
Now, there. Sorry I didn't sound like I was listening. I had to get this pudding whipped up.
Oh, that's all right.
Now, how do you mean compassion, Dan?
Well, do you know what compassion really means?
Something about putting yourself in someone else's place and feeling the same things he feels, isn't it?
Yes, but in its very strictest sense, it means suffering with someone else.
But don't you think he means for us to be cheerful? He's unhappy enough without our suffering, too.
It doesn't say we have to suffer. The idea is to try to feel right along with him.
You mean to be careful and not make it sound as if we're making light over his misfortune.
That's right. And if he wants to talk about Joyce, let him. He'll feel better. After all, I think if I lost you the way Fred's lost Joyce, then that would be the first thing on my mind. And I would sure want to talk about it.
So we'll try to clothe ourselves with the tender affections of compassion and let him know he has friends who really care.
That's the Bible suggestion. We've got to get him to feel a part of him, that he actually does belong.
Okay, Dan. We'll do the best we can. Meanwhile, would you mind getting the fixings for the salad?
Man, this lamb is delicious. It's only the
time. Well,
I don't feel like eating. That's all right, Fred. What do you want, Henry? I can always get sandwiches out of it later on.
I guess you could. It's only that my appetite kind of disappears.
I guess it does. But you're happy.
Maybe later on.
It's not good for
me. Enough to invite me over. I don't think I could face tonight all by myself at the house.
It isn't always we have an evening off where we can have company, Fred.
I'm afraid I'm not much company. Most of the time I feel as if I were ready to cry.
I think it'll help me going, you understand? We know that people will die. The natural human reaction is to sorrow. When Jesus' friend Lazarus died, Jesus wept. There's no shame in hurting for it.
Dan and I both love Joyce very much. We feel very deeply.
I think it's also new and fresh. Kind of feel like I'm the only man that's ever lost somebody he loves.
Well, why don't you look at something about suffering which may help alter you?
You mean the Bible hoax?
No, not at this point. You're already familiar with this, but read here in 1 Peter 5:9.
Right here?
That's right.
But take your stand against sin, solid in the faith, knowing that the same things in the way of sufferings are being accomplished in the entire association of your brothers in the world.
So you see what he was saying?
A lot of people are suffering.
And although you can't think you're all alone in it, a scripture like Revelation 21, 3 and 4 might cheer you up.
I know you don't hurt any less for knowing others suffer, Fred. But perhaps it can help to start putting things back into perspective.
That's the hard part, Anne. The events keep spinning crazily inside my head. I feel like my whole heart is drained and empty. Want to cry, but I can't. Hurt, but I'm helpless to change my pain. It's only that one day she was alive, talking to me about what we were going to do this weekend. And the next, her heart had stopped beating. I guess it's selfish. I wish she were here. I wish it so badly. I could... That's what you were telling me. I'm not the first or the last. I feel like an idiot acting like this. I'm supposed to be a grown man.
Fred, bone, flesh, heart, for any of us who we weep, our hearts feel.
That's right.
Natural, Fred. But you can't let yourself think that you're the only one, or that Jehovah God doesn't care.
You know, when you're face to face with reality, the Bible takes on so much more meaning.
It is a great comfort to have it.
That, having friends who believe enough to care for you.
Just keep your courage up, Fred. We're glad to help. We're sorry you have to leave so soon.
Well, I'd better try to get some sleep. Still have a lot of things to do, and I'll need my rest.
It was good to have you over to talk for a while.
Well, I guess I'd better be moving on.
By the way, before you go, why don't I stop by and pick you up on the way to work next week when you go back?
Oh, it's too much trouble.
Oh, I almost pass by your place every day anyway.
I'm not so sure I'm going back to you soon, Dan.
I'll stop by. I know you need time for solitude, but I don't think you need time for brooding.
Well, I'll see. It's still a little soon. Anyway, thanks again. I'll see you, Anne, Dan.
Goodbye.
So long.
He sure is having a hard time. But what you said about compassion was right, Dan. I still hurt for him.
But you can't hurt to the point that you don't see the problems involved. He needs someone to be there. He needs a sympathetic listening ear. And he also needs for someone to be firm with him and make him keep living his life. That's why I volunteered to help him be sure to get to work.
Such a painful thing.
Sure it is. More he puts on, greater it is. The Apostle Peter was from when he persecuted the Christians of his time that not our two but it all sounds had to have been.
I hope now that we do something for free.
If we compassion and Fred's risk for right for right place. Sure.
Come on, your teeth out. tough shots.
Yeah, so.
Say, Dan.
Yes?
Dan, I can't tell you how much I appreciate all you've done.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, questionnaires. Like today, you were just everybody. And you let me talk. Then instead of just letting me sit back and feel sorry for myself, you helped me to keep it like taking me to work every morning. Just to keep it.
We've been going 3 months.
That's another thing.
What do you want out of life? A home? A career? A large bank account? Or must life go deeper than that? Hello, I'm Nathan Belcher, and those are the questions we'll be exploring on this interview portion of the program, All Scripture is Beneficial. Our guests are two men who have given their entire adult lives to serving others. Both are Bible lecturers and members of Jehovah's Witnesses International Headquarters staff in Brooklyn, New York. They're Mr. Frank Toth and Mr. Patrick LaFranca. Thank you for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you for that complimentary introduction. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thanks for inviting us.
The work you do bears on the national and international activities of Jehovah's Witnesses. However, you also work with people on a one-to-one basis. Public and private Bible instruction, lecturing, marriage counseling, working with the elderly and infirm, and so on. And you're never paid for these services, if I'm informed correctly.
That's true. Our cause is a charitable one, and one of our principal beliefs is not to enrich ourselves at our brother's expense. This is in keeping with Jesus' teaching, you received free, give free.
Could you tell us whatever made you undertake such a career?
I must attribute a lot to my parents' influence because from a very early age, around 6 years old, why we began to study the Bible as a family, and it was instilled in me that it's the right, the proper, the good thing to do, serving God.
So you had a personal purpose or goal in life when you finished school?
Yes, it was a natural thing for me to just go right into this type of service.
In my case, it wasn't just my parents, but several older persons within the congregation were very encouraging to me. And I really feel that this interest that they showed in my spiritual advancement really had a tremendous influence upon me, and it certainly helped me to decide what I was going to do upon finishing school.
I should tell our listeners that both our guests look to be in their 30s. Am I correct?
Well, actually,
in my case, yes.
Actually, I'm in my early 40s, but I'm often taken for a younger person. I hope it's because of an active life.
How long have you been at what you're doing?
Go ahead, Frank.
Well, in my case, it's as far back as my grammar school days to some extent. At that time, I was giving short talks in the various congregations where I attended. And it wasn't until I reached my 20s when I actually got involved in the work in a broader way, caring for sick people, giving marriage counsel, and so on.
Well, in my case, it's been almost half my life. It's been over 14 years.
What do you consider to be the biggest single factor keeping you at your work?
Well, we found that the Bible offers the noblest incentives. For instance, Jesus said there's more happiness in giving than there is in receiving. Well, that's a fine and noble thought, and it's uplifting to a person. It really makes sense, and, well, it wakes one out of his apathy if that's the state of mind he's in.
Yes, this type of service isn't something that we're forced into doing, but we do it because there's a happiness involved. There's a real inner satisfaction in doing this work.
We've been doing a series of interviews on subjects directly related to young people and family life. Probably one of the most difficult periods of life is the crossing over from adolescence to adulthood. In your work, have you found any way to help smooth that passage, particularly with reference to goals in life?
Everybody, in fact, needs goals. But young people in particular, they don't know what they're going to do with their life, even after high school or college. they start experimenting with different things to see how they can fill the void. So we definitely need goals, and the Bible really gives us guidelines, gives us incentives to establish goals. And I like the thought in Proverbs chapter 4, where the inspired word says, "As for your eyes, straight ahead they should look. Yes, your own beaming eyes should gaze straight in front of you. Smooth out the course of your foot, and may all your own ways be firmly established." The Bible really does help us do that, too, to smooth out our course of life and to gain some real stability by following Bible principles.
Undoubtedly, you've seen how what you just said works out in real life. Can you tell us of any cases where parents and youths have succeeded using the, can I say, formula you've quoted?
Yes, in our congregation, we have a girl by the name of Alice. She was associating with the wrong crowd at school. In fact, a number of them were taking drugs and were involved in shoplifting. And her parents were alarmed when they found out what the trend actually was. And so they received some encouragement from the elders within the congregation. And immediately the parents engaged in a program to help their daughter come to her senses and choose a wholesome, noble goal for her life. And they were quite successful. Alice now is quite active in Bible study herself. She actively engages in somewhat of a missionary work in her own community and her neighborhood, encouraging other people to study the Bible. And she's having good success now.
I think of another Alice, in this case my own wife. She had a very good training, I think. She looks back and she sees that her father was quite strict with her. But she also sees the value of that. Her father did inculcate some very fine Bible principles and moral standards. And so when she was in her high school years, even though there were temptations to get in the company of people who were experimenting with drugs and who also got involved in sexual immorality, why, she stayed free of that. And after she left school, why, she got involved in helping people to understand the Bible and that type of service.
Do you feel there is ever a point in life where a person is too old to change his life course?
No, I certainly don't. For example, I know of a dear old 70-year-old woman who was quite discouraged with life and had doubts even about the value of the Bible or worship of God. But then a young woman called at her home and was able to answer questions that had been bothering this woman for quite some time, all her life, as a matter of fact. And she was so impressed with the answers that she received from the Bible that she began an intensive study of the Bible. And for the past 6 years now, she's been devoting her full life to teaching the Bible and offering encouragement and aid to the sick and elderly. So no matter how old or how young a person may be, if we appreciate the need for guidance from Jehovah God and we look to Him for strength, we can pursue a wholesome and beneficial course in life.
Do you relate a profession, skill, or a career with a purpose in life? Are they the same thing?
Not really. Pursuing a certain profession or skill is not automatically going to make one the kind of person he wants to be or the kind of person he should be. A person can be professional and still be corrupt. So a brilliant career in some profession or skill is not going to keep one from being a miserable failure in his personal or family life. The important thing is what kind of person he wants to be.
What do you see to be the highest purpose in life for a person?
Well, many people view perhaps serving their country as the highest purpose in life. And in fact, many people have done that and have even died in that service. But an even greater honor and privilege, I believe, is to serve the interests of our Creator. Because serving the interests of our Creator really benefits all of our fellow human beings. Because it involves their interests. And not just the interests, perhaps, of people in one culture. All the whole human family.
What is your feeling about that?
Yes, I certainly feel that the Bible contains the noblest ideals for anyone to reach for. The Bible tells us that our chief responsibility is to love and serve God first, and also to care for our neighbor, to love our neighbor as ourselves, in fact. And when a person does this, he can't help but be successful. He'll have the blessing of God, and he'll be respected by his fellow men. That's certainly a
Well, that's all from the real world today. Join us once again, why don't you, when the Voice of Long Island once again takes a look at the real world.
This is Billy Idol. You're listening to WSB Sonybrook 90.1 FM. Yeah, the station that plays the wide selection without objection. Thank you.
Oh, boy. Guess who that was?
Debbie McClatchy.
That's Debbie McClatchy, all right.
That's from her first album, Homemade Goodies.
Yeah. Her first album on, what, Fretless Records? On a division of Philo?
Right.
Yeah. And on that record...
And that's being discontinued, by the way.
What, the whole record company?
No, this record.
Oh, gosh, don't say things like that.
Yeah.
On this album, she thanks the great gang at Philo for their open welcome, their constant humor and patience, and their infectious love of life.
Who was playing Julian Pipes on that?
Bill Oakes.
Ox.
Bill Ox.
And he's going to be playing in Southhold tomorrow night.
December 4th.
Right.
Southhold.
Well,
what time
later
does that
today.
Start, 8 p.m.?
Yeah, that's about 7:30. The show opens up with Ed Keeney playing Irish fiddles. And you might recall hearing Eddie Keeney play on Bob Williams' show when he used to do his show here.
Way back when.
Yeah.
Not so long ago,
so that's going to be out at the Southhold Universalist Unitarian Church on Main Road, which is 25 in Selden.
Isn't that Main Street?
No, Main Road.
They call it Main Road out there?
Interesting. And it's sponsored by the Long Island Traditional Music Association.
Well, golly, I just might pop out there and see.
Yeah, so I'm going. You want to ride?
You going? Well, I'll think about it. I'll be in touch with you tomorrow.
And they're going to have a potluck supper. You know, you can make a dish and bring
one of those again, huh?
Yeah, that'll start at around 5:30 or so.
What did you make last time?
I made rice salad for the Debbie McClatchy thing.
Yeah?
And she liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You made it for Debbie McClatchy?
I made it for everybody to enjoy, and everybody did.
And she happened to be there.
Yeah, I had to pressure her for her opinion.
Wow.
But, in fact, I think I'm going to make rice salad for the Wasby party.
Yeah?
Oh, we're not supposed to mention anything about that.
You know what I'd like to have happen is to go out to Southhold, right, for a concert such as this, a small folk concert in a church, and then, while the concert is going on, nobody knows it, but it's pouring snow outside, right?
It won't tomorrow, because tomorrow, you gotta...
And everyone comes out, and suddenly, wow, we're trapped here, we can't get out. On Southhold, of all places, you know? Oh, boy.
So everybody just piles over to Steve Sanfilippo's house.
He lives out on the North Fork. No, you can't even get there. You have to stay...
In the church.
...marooned in the church for days and days until they dig you out.
Yeah. Well, luckily everybody will have had...
And they play folk music all the time, you know? They don't stop.
Luckily everybody will have had a full stomach on the potluck dinner.
Well, hopefully, you know, some of the food won't be that good and they won't have finished it, so you'll be able to eat that over the next couple of days.
If you want info on that concert, write this number down and call it tomorrow, 765-1837.
Get a pen.
That's 765-1837.
Okay. And our number once again
is Bicycle 6.
Bicycle 6?
Yeah.
BI 6. Okay.
7901.
That's very good. I don't know how you figure these things out. Well, once again, the staff of USBFM would like to make the upcoming holiday season a bit brighter for Long Island children who must spend the holiday season in an area hospital or child care facility. And we'd like your help.
Mine.
Yeah.
And yours, too.
Okay.
Remember last year when everybody from the Pinto family... Send in cards.
In Central Islip. That was very good of them. Well, for every listener postcard or letter that we receive before this Tuesday, December 21st, USB will present to such facilities 45s and LPs that will be given to children who may not receive any other gifts for the Christmas or Hanukkah holidays. And in addition, what are we going to do?
I smell pizza.
We won't be doing that. We'll add your name to a giant holiday greetings card that will be sent along with the records. And finally...
And this is the added bonus. We're going to be giving away 50... That's right, count them, 50, 5-0 records to you, the listeners, who send in, cards or letters and whatnot. And it'll be at a random kind of thing.
And winners will receive...
50 albums and...
bumper stickers.
Well, the winners will each receive one album, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. LPs and bumper stickers and things like that. Now, remember, your cards must reach us by December 21st. Mail them to...
Holiday Records.
WUSB-FM.
SUNY.
Stony Brook.
New York.
11794. Happy holidays from all of us.
Hooray.
Here at USB-FM. Yes, every last one of us. It seems too early, though, to be talking about holidays.
No, it doesn't, because, you know, by the time people get around to writing out that little their little card...
It's not too early to talk about that, but it is too early to be going around saying happy,
especially
happy holidays.
Especially since it's 13 degrees Celsius, 55 Fahrenheit, here on the Gold Coast of Long Island.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not winter yet. You know, that's why I don't want to throw my change into the Salvation Army guy's thing, because he's going to say Merry Christmas. And
that's
what am I going to say? I don't feel like saying Merry Christmas. It's only, you
know. That's true. When I filled in last Thursday morning, the Thanksgiving morning for Rich Koch, I happened to mention that the day before I had been at the mall.
And there was somebody with the bucket and ringing the bell. And I said, I'm not going to throw any quarters in there, not until at least the day after Thanksgiving.
They do come out earlier every year.
And I've been avoiding the mall like the plague.
And do you know what they do in the mall? They double up as security guards.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they tell you you can't park there. A guy with a bell, you know. It was supposed to be sort of like Santa Claus saying, sorry, you can't park there. I mean, come on.
Well, he's just being nice and trying to save the other guy a ticket or something.
Yeah, well, he said you're going to get a ticket if you park there, and he sounded just like a cop when he said that.
Hmm.
I don't know what's going on.
I should take my quarterback.
You certainly should. But you can't do that, I don't think.
Well,
no, we don't want
to
advocate.
You should get
like
your
that.
Shirt back then or something, huh?
Yeah, that's true. 27 minutes after 1 o'clock, Saturday
morning. 33 from 2.
33 minutes to 2 o'clock, yeah. That's Mike Juhas over there.
Yeah.
I'm Eric Corley over here, and this is the voice of Long Island all over.
Again.
Yeah.
You just turned on the wrong thing.
Whoops. Now, when you turn on the wrong thing, you don't hear anything. You hear silence.
You hear a scratch at the end of the record.
Yeah. Now, this particular case, there isn't even a scratch. You don't hear much of anything. It's a very little one.
So then you should pick up that Debbie McClatchy album before it's totally discontinued.
Yeah, that's right. Now, at that point, when I tried to turn on the music, that was a good point to turn on the music. Now, another good point has not occurred yet. That's why we're continuing to talk. We're just waiting for the moment to come up. Oh, that was one, and
coming.
I just blew it again.
Yeah.
But
Wait a minute. Here it comes. Now.
Oh.
Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the biggest piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the biggest piggies stirring up the dirt. Always having shirts to play around in.
What we're talking about is late night and early morning low life. With a chance of fall, chance of showers in the afternoon, with variable high cloudiness and gusty wind. Gusty winds at times around the corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold-blooded, with tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health and the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition. Yeah. There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a low and gust wind in the bedroom. Of a small suburban community with a 103.4 millibar high pressure zone and a weak pressure ridge extending from my eyes down my cheeks. Since you left me, baby, put the vice grips on my mental health. Well, extended outlook for an indefinite period of time till you come back to me, baby. High tonight, low tomorrow, and precipitation is expected.
Service broadcast a weather report for eastern Long Island. One Suffolk County legislator says it can't be heard in many sections. Suffolk legislator Gregory Glass, a Republican from Jamesport, whose legislative district includes most of eastern Long Island, says National Weather Service forecasts broadcast from Manhattan do not reach the far end of Long Island. Glass says accurate, up-to-date weather forecasts are crucial to farmers and to commercial and recreational fishermen. The National Weather Service broadcasts on a special radio frequency, KWO 35, from Rockefeller Center in mid-Manhattan. The weather radio station is operated by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Commerce.
Legislature Bliss says that the existing county-owned broadcast towers in Riverhead and Sag Harbor could be equipped to receive the National Weather Service broadcast directly from Manhattan and relay it to eastern Long Island. The special equipment would cost $25,000 and $12,000 annually for maintenance. He says he's seeking support for the idea from commercial and recreational fishermen and from farmers. According to Bless, the National Weather Service currently relays Long Island weather forecasts to Hartford, Connecticut for rebroadcast to eastern Long Island. But he hopes the Connecticut weather broadcasters report the forecasts for all of Connecticut first. And by the time the weather forecasts for Long Island are aired, many fishermen are already on the water.
Kevin McCarthy, the regional marine meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Garden City, Long Island, adds the Connecticut broadcast do not reach areas of the south shore of eastern Long Island, from Sayville to Southampton. McCarthy also confirmed that the Manhattan broadcast does not reach eastern Long Island at all. He says, there's kind of a hole in our coverage. McCarthy says the National Weather Service has no funds for new transmitters. He adds, any hookup between the Manhattan Broadcast Center and the county-owned transmitting towers in Riverhead or Sag Harbor will depend on finding money elsewhere.
And now the USD Long Island weather for tonight. Drizzle and fog. Lows 55 in the city and 45 to 50 in the suburbs. Tomorrow, becoming warm and sunny after morning fog. Highs in the 60s to near 70. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with patchy fog. Lows in the 50s. The winds south to southwest tonight and tomorrow at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Outlook for Sunday, variable cloudiness and warm, highs in the 60s. There are no advisories for Long Island waters in effect at this time.
Stay tuned to this station for more information on the weather.
Okay.
President Reagan indicates he expects the U.S. will continue to supply military aid to El Salvador. Reagan met in Costa Rica the provisional president of the troubled country. An official with Reagan says that during the meeting with Magana, the president expressed strong support for El Salvador's efforts to restore democracy. Every 6 months, Reagan must certify improvement in El Salvador's human rights record for military aid to continue. However, the U.S. official says there was no attempt to decide certification at the time of the Reagan-Magana meeting in San Jose. When the president returns home, he'll face a growing unemployment problem. The government reports a jobless rate of 10.8% for November, up 0.4% from October. Economists speak bleakly of the new unemployment figures, and congressional Democrats are calling for jobs programs. A spokesman for data resources in Lexington, Mass., refers to Reagan's statement of unemployment as a lagging indicator of the nation's economy. Alan Sinai agrees with the assessment, but he says when the numbers are so high, it casts a shadow over recovery. The director of the Institute for International Economics and a former Carter administration official, Fred Bergston, says the economy is showing virtually no sign of recovery. He says, except for housing, the rest of the economy is dead in the water, stagnant, going nowhere. Democrats on Capitol Hill are calling for the president to support a jobs program. Congressman Morris Udall of Arizona says Republicans ought to hang their heads in shame. But Senate Republican Whip Ted Stevens of Alaska says the Democratic suggestions are worn out, tired attempts to put Band-Aids on the economy.
The Indians in the Black Hills say they're willing to reduce the size of their Yellow Thunder camp. But a government lawyer says numbers don't matter because the government doesn't allow permanent buildings in the national forest. The Indians want to construct buildings at their campsite in the Black Hills National Forest. They're suing to save the camp. Storms in the West have claimed another life. A man in western Washington state was killed when he was sucked down a drain pipe. Washington Governor John Spellman has declared a state of emergency in the western part of the state. Police and firefighters in Uniondale, New York, were called to a supermarket after employees of the market heard screams from inside the building's air ducts. Officials found an 18-year-old woman stuck in one of the shafts. She'd been there 7 hours. She'd also been fired from the supermarket Thursday, and after all the questions were asked, she was charged with attempted burglary.
The first installment of the battle began about 2 weeks ago with a New Yorker magazine cartoon poking a little lighthearted fun at the community of Yapank. The cartoon in the November 15th New Yorker showed a road sign along the Long Island Expressway that read, Exit 66, Yapank. If you have already been to Yapank, please disregard this exit. Then, yesterday morning, just west of Exit 66 on the real LIE, police found someone's attempt at getting even. Once you've seen Yapank, you don't need the New Yorker, read the 4x6-foot official-looking sign that had been planted in cement on the eastbound side of the highway. The sign is gone now, removed by Department of Transportation workers who carted it off to a storage yard. And J.B. Handelsman, the Southampton cartoonist whose drawing started the whole thing, says he hopes the sign painter has the last laugh. Says Handelsman, so that's Yapank's revenge. If it makes them happy, I guess that's fine. I just wish everybody would forget about it.
Well, I want to thank the folks who came in to do our news. Mike, I thought they did a slam-bang job. I kind of like to do it ourselves next week.
Yeah, it's especially that guy with the last installment of the News Watch who was cracking up the whole time.
Yeah, really. He's kind of morose.
Yeah.
He went away and hid in the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
I see you. He can't hide. Oh, well, it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been lots of fun.
It's been lots and lots and lots of fun.
Wow.
You're making music on the air. Can I do that?
Yeah.
This is very dramatic. Do it at the same time. I mean, if they knew we'd be doing this with the new mic cable that came in, they never would have put it in here.
Certainly,
we play with everything. Well,
oh, there's a theme. Mike Uhas here.
Eric Corley there.
Goodbye.
Time to go. Next week. Same
see
time, same place.
Bye.
Bye.
WUSB.
Donnybrook.
Out my head by 10:30. Out with mates and dates and friends. That's what I do at weekends. I can't talk and I can't walk, but I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to watch my money go. At the local, no, no. When my feet go through the door, I know what my right arm is for. Buy a drink and call a chair. Up to the edge of the dance floor. Dancers bouncing through the night. Trying to stop or start a fight. I sit and watch the flashing lights. Moving legs in footless tights. I go out on Friday night. I go out on Saturday night. The bar gets full. I don't like life when things get dull. The hen parties have saved the night. Treat themselves with drums and sacks. Having fun and dancing in a circle round the leather bags. I go out on Friday night. I come on Saturday night. I go out.
Any presents.
Yes, Joe, it's so dreadful to be poor.
I don't think it's fair for some girls to have plenty of pretty things and other girls nothing at all.
We've got father and mother and each other.
We haven't got father and shall not have for a long time. Perhaps never.
You know the reason mother proposed not having any presents this Christmas was because it is going to be a hard winter for everyone. And she thinks we ought not to spend money for pleasure when so many men of the northern and southern armies are suffering so.
We can't do much.
But we can make our little sacrifices.
I do think washing dishes and keeping things tidy is the worst work in the world. It makes me cross, and my hands get so stiff I can't play the piano.
I don't believe any of you suffer as I do, for you don't have to go to school with impertinent girls who laugh at your dresses and label your father if he isn't rich.
Amy, if you mean libel, I'd say so, and not talk about a label as if Papa was a pickle bottle. I'm older than the rest of us, and I can recall when we had better times in this house.
They'll come again, Meg.
Well, certainly. We're young and talented. Joe will be a famous writer. Amy, a celebrated artist. And Beth, you will be a famous pianist.
And you, Meg?
She'll marry and support the rest of us.
Have an old-fashioned Christmas. Bring the children to see that masterpiece for all seasons, Little Women. A university theater production on the main stage at the Stony Brook Fine Arts Center, December 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 9th, 10th, and 11th at 8 p.m., with matinees on December 4th and 11th at 3 p.m.
Everybody, this is your friendly Professor Peter Sickley with yet another report from Hoople. Well, here we are again with another program of fine music and PDQ Bach. We'll start with a little of the latter, as usual, as we hear the Schleptet in E-flat major, as performed by members of the Freshman 4-H Club Symphonic Society of the University of Southern North Dakota at Hoople. And we'd like to do this one for John and Biffy and their advisor, Mr. 4-H Club himself, Harry Herbert Hoover Heaver. That was PDQ Bach's Schleptet in E-flat major, performed quite enthusiastically, I think, by students at SNDU at H. And I must say, why Beethoven's septet receives performance after performance while this work remains shrouded in obscurity is something I will never understand.
W-O-O-F-O-O-L.
And it's time to play What's My Melodic Line? The game where you try to stump E Virtuosi di Hoople by sending in the score to any instrumental piece written between 1600 and 1750. Our musicians here, who are probably more familiar with the corpus of the Baroque repertoire than perhaps anyone else in the world would want to be, they are given nothing but the title. And if they are unable within 1 minute to begin playing the opening section of the work, the listener who sent the piece in receives a beautiful painted plaster bust of Giuseppe Torelli and becomes... a period of 35 years. Now, today we have a very interesting coincidence. Three listeners have sent in works by the same composer. That composer is Arcangelo Spumoni. Now, he is one of the most prolific and least known of the many prolific and unknown Baroque composers, so I think our boys here may be in for a little bit of trouble. Well, I'm looking at them now through the big plate glass window that separates the announcer's studio from the music studio, and they have their instruments ready, so let's get started. Our first piece was sent in by Thorne Thornson from over there in Beulah, and he wants to see if you fellows can play Spumoni's Concerto Grosso in F Major, Opus 2, number 537. Well, they're conferring now among themselves. Arcangelo Spumoni was born in 1605 and flourished around 1700. He was a pupil of Vivaldi and distantly related to Casanova's mother, Bossa Nova. And this concerto is subtitled La Primavera. Until recently, it was referred to, when referred to at all, as the Spring Concerto. However, a recent paper by Professor Paul Behrer, published in the current issue of the Musical Hind Quarterly, reveals that Spumoni was married twice during his life, both times to women named Vera, making it clear that the subtitle is, in fact, a dedication to his first wife. Well, I've gotten the signal from I Virtuosi now, so let's see what they come up with. That is absolutely correct, gentlemen. That is how Spumoni's Opus 2, number 537 begins. All right, now next we have a piece sent in by Miss Sarah Saracen, who lives in Plum Coulee up in Manitoba. And the piece she's hoping will trip you up is the Trio Sonata in E Major by Spumoni, Opus 1, number 1. Okay, the boys are already ready, so let's hear it. You did it again, boys. Now we have a very tricky one for our harpsichord player. It was sent in by Sonny Sonson from Zap, and he wonders if you can remember the first of Spumoni's three-part inventions, Opus 6, number 4 to the power 9. Be careful now, Gerald. Do you think you know how it goes? Oh, no. No, you fell into the trap, Gerald. Gerald, you fell into the trap. That's the first of the two-part inventions, which were written at about the same time, but show them the three-part inventions. See? That's right. That's number one of the three-part inventions. Well, Mr. Sonson, you really stumped him, and you'll be receiving your plaster bust of Torelli, and your name will be put in the hat for that grand prize next December. Sorry about that, Mr. Thornson and Miss Saracen. You failed to stump Virtuosi, but we'll be sending you our consolation prize, the Toscanini recordings of the 9 Beethoven symphonies. I hope you try again, and better luck next time. It's all part of the fun on What's My Melodic Line?
WWF gives you the time of day.
At the sound of the tone, the time will be exactly 8:14 and 23 seconds.
Here's the news.
And let's see what the big stories are in today's Hoople Scoop. Seems to be mostly ads today. Here's an important item. A report from Minot that fish in the Mouse River have been dying by the hundreds due to the low water level. State health and game officials have requested that water from Lake Darling be rushed downhill to the Minot area as quickly as possible. And now let's take a look at the statewide junior high intramural basketball scores for last night. Fargo beat Bismarck 108-3, and Devil's Lake dumped Dickinson 7-6. Anamoose trounced Tuttle 205-189, while McVille murdered Mose 487-32. Cogswell clobbered Gwinner 93-60 as Velva and Voltaire tied at 20-20, while Pingree punctured Daisy 40-19. Cannonball flattened Frida 206-106, and Donnybrook squeezed out air 503-501. Meanwhile, Vang was victorious over Monango 2-1, Overly overwhelmed Napoleon 18-12, Gackel and Fingal were even at 7-up, and Beulah bowed to Burt 20-1. And that's the news from the Lake City edition of the Hoople Scoop. And it's PDQ Bach time again. And this time we're going to hear the fugue in C minor for Calliope Four Hands, Chicoly number 3.14. This piece is sometimes known as the Toot Fugue, and we will now hear it performed by the famous four-handed organist Emmanuel Pedel, playing on the chamber or indoor calliope of the Grindig Family Circus at Eagle, Austria. And this is for Carl and Philip and Manny and all the rest of the gang down there at the King's Court Motel. Thank you. That was the Toot Fugue in C minor for Calliope Four Hands by P.D.Q. Bach, as interpreted by Emanuel Pedel, whose tutor, incidentally, was Albert Schweitzer himself. And I think if one compares this work to the awkward contrapuntal exercises of early 19th century composers, Beethoven, for instance, one cannot help but be convinced of the superiority of even the lesser Baroque masters.
W-O-O-F, hoopal.
So let's move into the final portion of the show here and take a look at what's happening in home economics. I'll bet you didn't realize that 44% of families living in cities do some home canning. They put up an average of...
I was afraid this would happen. Down. It's going away. I don't care what they say. I don't care what he does. Nothing can make me say. I like Beethoven's symphonies. No! Put on a commercial.
If you have never smoked a cigarette, you don't know what fun is in. Oh no, you don't know what I'm missing. Your nose all rough from taking snuff, you know it will get rougher. A PDQ will prove to you that you needn't suffer, you really needn't suffer. My special blend will give no end of reason to be jolly. A recipe that came to me from Sir Walter Raleigh, the great Sir Walter Raleigh.
So PDQ, what can you lose?
What can you lose?
Well, I will say this, that considering his handicap, Beethoven did pretty well. Some of his country dances are very nice pieces. Now, a lot of people have written in recently about the theme song of this program, and both of them wanted to know if it's a PDQ Bach piece. Well, I'm surprised that you would have to ask. It certainly is. It's the Sinfonia from his Diverse Airs on Sundry Notions, and features extensive solos on the worm. Now, in addition to the worm terms, this piece is also marred by the sneezing of the countertenor. But I'll be glad to play the entire movement since you asked for it. And I hope you'll join me again next week when I may very well be back with another Report from Hoople.
Cutting a pull of my planter.
Drinking all our beer, 'cause in heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we are gone from here, all our friends will be drinking all our beer. Oh, thank you now. There is no smoke. That's why we'd better have another toast. 'Cause someday when we croak, all our friends will be smoking all our smoke. 'Cause in heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we are gone from here, beer. In heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we are gone from
Master, so let me make it prosper. God is my full of. Thank you. day. 14 cents a measly pay. It's hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times everywhere. Hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times, cotton mill girls. It's hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times everywhere.
Hard times.
This is George Thurgood from the Delaware Destroyer saying, listen to WUSD, Stony Brook, 94.1 FM.
I walk 47 miles of barbed wire. I got a cobra stick for a necktie. A brand new house on the roadside, and it's a made out of rattlesnake hide. Got a brand new tin that better fit on top, and it's a made out of human skull. Come on, take a little walk with me, baby, and tell me who do you love.
Insights, a daily feature of the station. I'm Steve Schiff. Starving in the Shadow of Plenty is a shocking book by Loretta Schwartz Noble. It tells of those, not so few Americans, who go hungry and those who are starving. Loretta told us how she began to piece together this horrifying story.
I began by connecting with a person, and in my case it was a particular elderly woman, a woman of about 82, who I fell across, who was without any food. And when I first